As you've heard over the last number of weeks, a priority focus for Beacon this year is to engage in the commitment made by the Canadian Unitarian Council and the Unitarian Universalist Ministers of Canada to the journey of healing and reconciliation between Canadian Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people. This morning, we're going to watch a video by Chief Dr. Robert Joseph, who is the Ambassador for Reconciliation Canada. And this was a TEDx talk that he gave entitled Healing a Nation Through Truth and Reconciliation. After that, we're going to hear from the facilitators of the Truth, Healing, and Reconciliation Reflection Guides for Beacon, Audrey Taylor, Tyler Vitti, and myself, about the path that led us to this reconciliation work. And that program is starting up this Wednesday, October 4th, so please talk to any of us about that if you're interested.
Greetings, all my relatives. Nimuyut, we are all one. I'm so honored to be here to celebrate that idea with you, because I'm guessing that you are caring people and that's why you're here today. It is so important for us to embrace this ancient salutation by the Kwakwala speakers of the world. There are only few now, maybe 50 left, who speak this language. But inherent in those words, Qila Kasla Nimuyut, was the very idea that they were acknowledging one mankind, and by extension, acknowledging all of creation, one whole, inseparable, interconnected, balanced, and in harmony. Those sentiments are embedded in all of the ancient cultures of the world. They're the ancient worldview that many people held. And I think it's been one way in which humanity has been calling for reconciliation throughout all of that time that we've been here. And so here we are together today, Canadians, all of us. And we're being called again, this time by Canada's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which just concluded its work not too long ago. It's sad that in this country we needed one, but nonetheless, we've had one, and knowing what we now know, we must respond to the call to reconciliation, because it's the right thing to do, because it aligns with our Canadian values. And so I have great, deep hope and optimism for this country. I love Canada very much. I love it, all of its people, and the array of ethnicity and difference and diversity and age and gender. We are a beautiful country. But I think it's time now that we pause for a moment to review our history together. We do have a shared history together, and not all of it has been good. There have been harmful residues of a colonial period in which we came through, and that still haunts us today. I'm sure that all of you watch television, read the news, and you see the Aboriginal condition on the ground. We hear about those kids in Epawatastakat, kids who don't want to live anymore. And I think that's a sad reflection on how we haven't moved forward together from the time all of the newcomers came to this country. So that's what I want to talk about today, reconciliation. I want you to think and imagine with me and dream with me what that looks like 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now. When we are reconciled, we will live together peacefully and in harmony. When we are reconciled, we will be gentle with each other. We will be caring and compassionate. When we are reconciled, justice and equality will prevail. When we are reconciled, everybody born here, everybody living here, will live with dignity and purpose and value. You see, those are things that you already embrace for your own lives. But when we are reconciled, all of us, Canadians all, will have that same idea that we should embrace and nurture those things that we stand for. And when we are reconciled with our Aboriginal neighbors, our governments will honor the treaties. They will make new ones. And when we are reconciled, Aboriginal people in this country will take their place alongside all of you, expressing their own ethnicity, expressing their own spirituality, expressing freedom from their very souls because they haven't been there with you. So I want you to see that with me. I want you to walk with me down that pathway to reconciliation with all of the other Aboriginal people, of course, but us, because that's who we're talking about, is us, we, you, all of us Canadians together. We are all Canadians. The moment you came to this country and you became a citizen, whether it was a generation or two ago or just recently, we are all Canadians. We inherit everything about being Canadian, including our past. And so we have to embrace those values like accountability and inclusion that will make our country greater. We stand in a moment of the greatest promise that I've ever seen for this country. A moment where we can reflect upon our relationship with each other, to learn to honor each other, to respect each other, to hold each other up. Reconciliation, really, at the heart of it all, is this idea of love, of loving yourself, of loving others. And we all can be driven by that as we try to determine what reconciliation looks like and where and how and when it will start. So I invite you down this pathway of reconciliation. Reconciliation isn't just for Aboriginal people and churches and governments. It's for all of us. And so we need you. We need you to be a part of this great dream, this idea that we can live together in this country, together, as one. I see that it's going to happen. All you have to do is get ready, prepare yourself, engage, talk about it around a dinner table, talk about it where you work, talk about it wherever you are. And let's make this issue a topic that is important for all Canadians. One day soon, we will have achieved a country that is reconciled, where every kid has the dream that, not dream, where every kid knows that they're important, that they're valued, that they're loved, and that they have a future in our great country. What else can I say? Nothing with you. You who are one with me. Let us get together so that we can start this journey of reconciliation. Thank you.
Good morning. Can you hear me? How's this? How's that? Okay. Well, let me know if I drop my hand while I'm speaking. I'm Audrey, and when Janet asked me if I would talk with you just a bit about why I was drawn to facilitating the Truth, Health, Healing, and Reconciliation Reflection Guides, I had to really think about it, and I had to write it down. My thinking led me to the 20 years I spent living and working on the northern tip of Vancouver Island. I was working for a non-Indigenous, non-profit health, social service, and community development agency. There are 4 First Nations bands in the area living on 4 reserves, and there are several small communities, primarily Caucasian people. I had the opportunity to work with each of the bands and communities, but primarily on Cormorant Island with the Namgis First Nations and the community in Alert Bay. Cormorant Island is an interesting place. It is a small island, just a ferry ride away from Port McNeill, and the population is almost evenly split between people living on the Namgis Reserve and people living in the town. On the reserve, there was a very large brick building with peeling white paint that was the Indian residential school, a very real reminder of a not very distant past. The building was demolished just 2 years ago. Many of the Namgis people living on the island and the surrounding reserves attended that residential school, or their parents or their grandparents did. I saw firsthand the results of poverty, alcoholism, and family breakdown. I felt the sadness and the hopelessness of adults and children lost in addiction and emotional pain. I could see clearly that government funding for services on reserve was not equal to the needs of the people. In working with the Namgis Health Center, the Yumista Cultural Center, the Namgis K to grade 3 school, and the off-reserve public school and hospital, I also got to know First Nations leaders who were strong, healthy, proud, and successful. I experienced a culture that is rich in compassion, generosity, inclusiveness, and justice. Cormorant Island is a place where Indigenous and non-Indigenous people live, work, and go to school together in harmony. The experience of those 20 years has had a profound effect on me. I see the effect of the injustices of the past and the present, and I see that living together in harmony and equality is possible. What I haven't seen until now with the Truth, Healing, and Reconciliation process is a way to get from where we are to living together in equality and harmony. It won't be fast and it won't be easy, But if we all, Indigenous and non-Indigenous people, have the will and the knowledge, if we really listen to one another, I know that we can do it. Our non-Indigenous culture has much to gain from embracing the strengths of the Indigenous culture, and vice versa. The chance to play even a small part in this process is humbling for me. I thank you, Beacon, for giving me the chance.
Good morning. It's a great honor for me to be up here today. So heartened to see all of you here. Many gratitudes for visitors, for the new people that are sitting around the circle with us today. I have a few words. So my name, if you don't know already, is Tyler Vitti. I'm from a small town called Fort Frances. It's in northwestern Ontario. It lies on the border of International Falls, Minnesota. We don't have a picture. It's just a short drive from Manitoba, so as far away as you can get from Toronto. We're a small town. We're fiercely Canadian, and though we relish the freedom of going across the river to the U.S. to watch a movie, there were barriers and boundaries in our hearts. In school, I was taught to proudly sing our anthem and count metric and remember the sacrifices of our soldiers during the Great Wars. I didn't know my heritage, but I'm Canadian, and that's enough. Fort Frances really is a good place to grow up, as you can see. If you look at the map, I can tell you intimate details of every fish that I caught, or nearly caught. This is a what we call the point. And I could tell you the logs where you could still now find the frogs. I could show you the tree where, as I looked out the window of my camper, was struck by lightning. I could tell you the ripples of the currents and the waves as Rainy River flows out of Rainy Lake there. I'm a good man, a good Canadian. I'm polite, respectful, say please and thank you, and I believe in the strength of diversity. I vote, march, volunteer, serve, fundraise, and donate. And I'm a dad. One of my delights as a dad is being able to show my kids the wonders of life, being able to take them home and show them what it was like for me as a child. So one day this past summer, I took Emily out, and I took her to the point. I showed her the tree. I showed her the crayfish. I showed her where I had wonder. And as we left, normally, you might be able to see a road here. Ordinarily, I would turn left here where the Rusty Myers float billing terminal is. But that day I didn't, and I found myself in a place I'd never been before. It's a very small town. It's unlikely I've never been anywhere. And it wasn't very long, it was actually just a few meters further that I found St. Margaret's Residential School. And I'd only just read about it 2 months before that. I didn't even know it was still standing. Like, what a heavy, heavy experience that was to be there with my daughter, my 5-year-old daughter, Emily, who I knew this fall was going to be going to kindergarten. And I told her stories of how children were taken away by policemen, sometimes for 10 months, taken away to learn a language and a culture that they never knew about, taken away from their families. I wondered, how could a child survive that? I didn't know. Of course, I'm not sharing all this with her, but, you know, the tears are in my eyes. I'm sitting there, and we took some moments, and we drove further And I'm wondering, how did these children survive? And well, some didn't. And some survived in rather creative ways. As we drove past the school, a rather loud reminder of what happened came to me as I saw rows and rows and rows of little white crosses behind the school. So it's a telling reminder of sort of what residential school is, and this is just really one thing that has happened in our history. All of my life I've lived beside that school and really have been completely oblivious to its existence. All of my life I've lived beside Indigenous people whose lives are tied to the trauma of really these cultural genocide schools. Most of my life I've been unaware of just how devastating our Western culture has been to our Indigenous neighbors. As a good Canadian, I need to change and I need to do my part. I need to learn and acknowledge the truth. I need to heal the sting and shame of guilt. I need to work on learning who I am so that I can be a responsible partner with my Indigenous neighbors and build relationships that are built, they're anchored in mutual respect and service to one another. Truth, healing, and reconciliation, as Audrey said, is a mechanism for us to be able to get past this, to leave behind the shame and the guilt, because it's not helpful for any of us, but it can really get in the way. We need to just skip it out as much as we can and just start to acknowledge that we're ignorant. Start to acknowledge that we might not know all that there is. It takes a perspective shift. And we can do it together. We're going to do it together. It's going to start on Wednesday, and I hope you're there with us. I'd like to do my part here. I know I'm a little over time, but I've spent some time trying to figure out how I can do my part, and I'd like to reintroduce myself. My name is Gary Tyler Vitti. And I am from Fort Frances, Ontario. It is a part of Anishinaabe, Salto Ojibwe homeland where Treaty 3 was negotiated and stands between the Crown and the people, the First People. I'm a multi-generation Canadian settler with heritage from post-World War Hungary and probably 18th, 19th century Wales, Scotland, and England. I'm a visitor to the Coast Salish Territory and have made a home on unceded Kikait land in New Westminster. I'm a brother of Elder Art Leon's Sweat Lodge family, and in November, I am pledging my service as firekeeper to the Eagle Society's Lytton Sundance. Miigwech, thank you. Merci beaucoup. Wajak yo. Namuit.
I have a picture on my wall of a colleague and I dressed in what then would have been called Indian clothing, standing in front of a teepee. I have a drum in my hand. There are bonfires burning on either side of us. It's 1991. I'm dressed this way because I'm taking part in a closing ceremony of an environmental program that I was teaching, a ceremony that involves us telling the story of a fictitious Native American tribe learning the secrets of the natural world. I cringe when I look at this photo now, aware of the cultural appropriation that was woven through the ceremony. But we meant no disrespect. On the contrary, this was a sacred ceremony, and I felt honored to be taking part. At that time in my life, I had posters on my wall that quoted wisdom from Indigenous elders. I attended a powwow, participated in Native dances, took part in a sweat lodge. Indigenous people opened these experiences to the broader community, part of their deep pride and gracious sharing of their culture. For me, participation felt comfortable. My environmental work was intertwined with Indigenous learnings. These perspectives were a part of how I saw the world. They made sense. They were home. Less than a decade ago, when I was working at UVic, that comfort started turning to awkwardness in my interactions with Indigenous people. I didn't have to learn that we are all the same. I didn't have to welcome the other. I had to learn that we are different. It was at a community meeting when the full weight of this difference hit me. My colleague and I had been invited by the Tsawut First Nation to talk with them about an ecological restoration program that we were offering and ways that we could make these courses available to the community. At first, I questioned how I could speak about ecological restoration to people whose connection to the land is much deeper and more informed than mine would ever be. But perhaps that connection to the land was no longer a reality for this community. My ignorance of their circumstances rendered me silent. At the same time, I wore my university affiliation, my settler roots, my white skin, like an uncomfortable cloak that I wanted to shrug off. And yet, that educated, middle-class, urban identity is who I am. In that moment, I realized that I may have felt resonance with Indigenous perspectives and ways of life, but I was an outsider, and I didn't know the rules of engagement. Worse than that, my love, I feared, was not enough. My blindnesses, the fact of my privilege, rendered me not just an outsider, but a problem. I didn't want to cause offense, but I didn't know how to walk gently or where I may be touching tender places. Now at SFU, I'm the lead person providing faculty support to indigenize the curriculum. The weight of this work sits heavily on my heart. I have obligations to my employer to show results in the university's reconciliation efforts. But this results-oriented way of looking at reconciliation is in conflict with my obligation to Indigenous people to honor their truth, their reality, their deep wisdom. I don't know how to reconcile these tensions in myself, nor do I know what is needed to walk the path of reconciliation with Indigenous people. But I do know that the Truth, Healing, and Reconciliation Task Force with the CUC is doing it right. The path they have chosen to take to reconciliation is steeped in ways that honor relationship, that don't gloss over difficulty, nor paralyze us with guilt and shame. These are difficult conversations, important conversations, that call me to lend a hand and devote my heart and mind. So in the last 20 minutes, we've heard many perspectives on reconciliation, and we're just going to take a moment now to sit with those words, for each of us to connect with our own hearts and thoughts about reconciliation. When our meditation finishes, Susan Aglukkaq's OCM is going to be playing. The lyrics will be on the screen.